Ah, thank goodness. The heat waves have subsided here. It's a cool 80 degrees in New York City. You know what's really hot in New York City when you're walking down a street and the condensation from the air conditioners from high, high above drops a pellet of water on you and you go, thank God. Or when you're in line at Dunkin' Donuts or Starbucks for 20 minutes. Normally, you want to pull teeth, jump over the counter, and pummel the people. But on days like that, it's so cool to be inside. It feels good. My name is Mark Farrell. The show is Inside on the Progressive Radio Network. Thanks for joining me today. Really appreciate it. We've got a great show coming your way. You're going to meet the executive producer of an incredible new movie called Hearing is Believing. A new feature documentary from award-winning producer-director Lorenzo DiFestano, introducing the world to the astonishing young woman, Rachel Flowers. Maybe you saw her in 60 Minutes, not once, but even twice. Phenomenal, gifted individual. And the New York City premiere is coming tomorrow, Friday. And we'll give you all that information in just a few minutes. Thank you very much to Steve Hart, who gave me a great email about, he's an avid listener to the show. Appreciate your input there, Steve, who lives in Carlstadt, New Jersey. Always listens to it, avid fan, and enjoys the riveting interviews. I forget exactly what he said, but of course I'll just embellish and put that in there. So I want to talk about some things that are on top of mind today. This is really cool. Three high school kids have created a rape date straw detector. So they created this because one of their sisters, who's in college, they heard about some girl, unfortunately, being raped due to what happened at a party, frat party. And she was imbibing in a cocktail. And, you know, the rest is, just ask Bill Cosby what happens from there. So this straw actually, when it's put into a liquid beverage, turns blue. And this is interesting. This is three high school kids. Do you believe that? It's phenomenal. I love this. And they actually submitted this plan to their high school competition for a business plan, and it went, they rejected it. And here they are waiting for a patent. They're waiting for GoFundMe so they can get this out there and for the world. So it can be distributed to bars, clubs, restaurants, to Bill Cosby's house, you know, anywhere there can be, you know, because it's really unfortunate because they say one in four women will experience some sort of sexual misconduct in their life. And that's unfathomable. That's nobody should experience any misconduct in their life, especially a woman in terms of date rape. And also sex traffickers, unfortunately, use this as a way to obviously, you know, get their victims aside. So, they're seeking their patent and, they're crowdfunding. So if you want to find out more, just Google it. And it's very fascinating, the fact that three high school girls, I mean, we can send a man to the moon. I mean, we can create apps in 24 hours, but it's three high school girls that actually do something about this. I mean, this has been going on for, decades. I've never known. Actually, I think I've known someone. Actually, I just remember this as I speak. My father used to be a businessman, and he had said that he was at a bar on a business trip, and he swore, this is probably in the 70s, that he got drugged because he remembered meeting a woman at the bar. I think she bought him a drink or they had a drink, and he said he had gone to the restroom and come back, and he blacked out the whole night and woke up on his bed in his hotel. Maybe there's another version that he told his friends. I'm not sure, but my father was a very honorable man. So don't let your mind even go there. So who knows how long it's been around. But obviously we've been hearing about this for far too long. But it just boggles my mind. Not that I certainly don't value the ability, the ingenuity, and the competitiveness and the competency of high school kids. But I'm just surprised that high school kids have developed this drug. Good for them, man. That's great. So, because when I speak to schools, this is a little bit of a sidebar. When I was at a school last week speaking, that's why I wasn't on air here. My apologies. One of the things I actually, it was a five topic talk. It was about an hour and a half talk on drugs and alcohol, overcoming adversity, anti-bullying, mental health, and celebrating differences. One of the questions was after during a Q&A, do you ever have a desire to use drugs again? And I said to the kid, why are you holding? No. I said to him, you know, once in a great while, when I take some medication, maybe eye drops once in a while, you get a drip, a postnasal drip when you do eye drops, take eye drops. And it reminds me of doing coke. And I used to do a lot of cocaine. So when I get that drip, it's kind of like, oh, wow, this is a free, clean buzz. This is really cool. And it takes me back. But it was a very interesting question and pretty poignantly placed in the time and setting after a pretty in-depth talk and heartfelt and kind of, you know, obviously exposing myself to this crowd, and which is what it's all about, because obviously I want audience members to understand exactly my life trajectory, where I was, how I felt, how I got there, and how I got out of it, and how I maintain. So it's very important. So when I speak to high schoolers, and my point going back to these three genius girls developing this date drape. Why do I keep saying date drape? Oh my God. Maybe it's the new curtains in here. We do have some pretty wild new curtains here. Gary, nice job on the curtains. The studio's looking swank, man. Wow. We're going on Facebook Live, not today, because I am not dressed properly, because I could not get the wrinkles out of this shirt. I tried and I tried. I put it in a dryer for 20 minutes, so we'll be live on Facebook live next week. So in the meantime, I will get this correct. Straw that detects date rape drugs. That's it. Anyway, so I hats off to high school kids everywhere on their ability to be so intelligent and to find a need and to fulfill it. So Father's Day this weekend, what does that mean? I don't know. Have you seen a new commercial for Foot Locker? It's very well done. And you may have a different take on it. I have a take on it because it's well done from the creative standpoint. But there are two stars, and I don't remember exactly who they were, so I saw this very fleetingly. So I'm remiss in remembering exactly who they were. But obviously two big icons. And one of them is talking about how his father just made him practice, get into the right school, would be on the field, you know, chastising the coach for not getting enough hands, touch time, etc. And then the other kid's like, yes, fishing with my father, going out for ice cream with my father, all these different comparisons. So one side of the story, the pitch is that his father was totally driven and driving his whole life and career and future. And you feel a little bit for the guy because it's like, well, that's not what a father should totally be, or a parent in general, because it's not about, you know, 1,000% sports and the trajectory of what kind of contract you're going to sign and bonuses, signing bonuses and sponsorships with Nike, etc. It should be about life. The good times, the bad times, growing, educating, sports, laughing, rolling around on the grass, frolicking, football game on a Saturday, all that jazz. So it's very well done. So what does Father's Day mean to you? Whether your parents still alive, maybe your father certainly. Is it a day you say, okay, guys, I'll see you at the end of the day, and you go do your own thing? And for me, it's more of a good reason to spend more time with the family. Usually on a nice day, certainly I like to do a lot of grilling. But more importantly, it's just a day that, I mean, every day, this sounds corny because I got this from my mom, but she says every day is Mother's Day. But it's true for me. Every day is Father's Day. Every time I look at my kids, I just feel incredibly fortunate to have brought two people in this world that are really just extensions of your heart, that are sort of on the outside of your body, if you think about it. And what you put in is what you get out. So it's kind of nice. You know, once a week you want to take them and put them into a catapult and, you know, try to launch them as far as you can, do a different stratosphere. But in between those moments, there are really good times. So Father's Day, it's a cool thing. It's not a big celebration. It's just a good excuse to have a bottle of wine and a good steak. So that's pretty cool. So this year marks the final event of my family's marking of my brother's death. And it's the Michael Farrell Foundation Scholarship Fund. So as you know, for our avid listeners here at Insight, my brother took his life 25 years ago. And ever since then, I'd say maybe I think 2 years after he died, we started this program where we have a cocktail party in New York City right here, because my brother loved the city, lived in the city, and we all love the city here. And it's a fun event. It's a three-hour event, open bar, and hors d'oeuvres, and lots of laughs, good friends. And it's changed many, many times in terms of the core of people are always the same, certainly the nucleus of my family. and friends and his colleagues, and people cycle in, cycle out, you know, just like a lot of times in our lives and circles of friends we have of people in our lives that are current and, you know, it's, things pass along. And it's been great. So what we do is, you know, we charge a nominal fee, and what we've been able to do every year since then is send an underprivileged kid, an urban kid, to a creative arts program in the summertime. So typically, it's a kid in the five boroughs who wouldn't normally be able to afford an Upper East Side summer educational creative program. Costs a couple $1,000s. So what we've been doing is sending two kids actually there in the last couple years. And since it's approaching the 20, actually it is the 25th year, we decided that this would be the finale. That it's time to, we don't feel like it's an imposition for people because, again, people cycle in, cycle out. And the last 4 years, we've cycled it every other year just because of respect for people's and lack of time. I mean, there's four siblings in my family, and, you know, getting everyone's schedule together is very a daunting task. You should see that email chain. Holy geez. Anyway, I digress. But it's a great event, and this is our last year coming up in a couple of weeks, and we're making a big grand hoo-ha because all getting hotel rooms, and it's always at the venue that we always like, and more people are coming. And just wanted to point out that, you know, it doesn't have to be certainly the end of a life to celebrate someone's gift and or just who they are. I mean, certainly it's not like, okay, let's have an annual event for Mark because I feel like having a party every year. Hey, but why not? It's a good excuse to have a party. Someone said to me, a good friend of mine introduced me to his friend years ago. This is probably 15 years ago, 18 years ago. And he came over to my house, and my friend Harry goes, Harry, this is Jim. Jim, this is Mark, blah, blah, blah. And he goes, what's the party for? I said, what do you mean? He goes, well, you know, people usually have reasons to have a party. I said, I just want to have a party. He reminds me of that statement all the time. He goes, once I met you and you told me that you didn't need to have a reason to have a party, he's like, I knew I was going to be friends with you for a long time. Anyway, so it just goes to show that, you know, little deeds that we do in life. Certainly, I wish my brother was here. We wouldn't have to have an event like this. But he was very, very involved. He was as assistant district attorney for years and dealt with a lot of very, very ugly child cases that went through court, and therefore mentored a lot of kids. And we thought that this would be a good way to remember him in a very kind and giving way, as he was. And why not by giving someone an opportunity to be creative and an outlet and an atmosphere? And who knows, maybe it'll launch them into a trajectory in life where they can appreciate art and or maybe incorporate that into their hobby and or a professional lifelong goal. Who knows? So in just a few minutes, again, we're going to be talking about the great new movie, Hearing is Believing. But I just want to cover one or two more things because political avoidance, I mean, in the circle of friends that you're at, I mean, it's such a hot topic. And sometimes, you know, we get stimulus overload. It's so easy to be like, I just can't. I'm trumped out this week. I got to check out with all the different things, the hearings on the Capitol Hill, et cetera. I mean, the laundry list goes on and on. You cannot keep up with this information. It could be a part-time job. Could be almost a full-time job. So what is it like for you? I mean, sometimes I meet people. I have to be careful because sometimes they could be colleagues or people in your work sphere that, you know, you certainly, whether it's a political disagreement or not, I mean, I don't go there, but in terms of the actual plugging in or unplugging, I've met a few people in the last week and a half that are just like, I don't care. It doesn't matter. It's not going to impact me. And again, I just don't really go there too much because, you know, you really want these people to be plugged in because, you know, it is our future. And obviously now more than ever, you can see the output or the results, the consequences can dearly impact you in almost the near future. So when I say to people, oh, you know, hey, what's going on? Oh, did you read about this or did you hear about this? Or, you know, I just don't listen to any of it because, and I understand because, again, you get tired of it. You feel like it's a vicious cycle. Of course, I understand so many different things. But I guess when I get turned off by people who are just very, very negative about the whole cycle, and I get it. But if it's just a continuous thing, because, you know, you do get burned out, as I mentioned, but I think it's our job. I mean, as, you know, the Constitution says, you know, the right of free speech and free press and, you know, your opinion, you know, you don't have to even voice your opinion, but just to be plugged in to know what's going on, I think is our inalienable right. As you know, and I'm not going to get too deep here. Don't be like, oh my God, Mark's going on a tangent. No, 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 no. The reality is you have the right to be plugged in or not, political or any other aspect of life, religion, whatever. You know, my church is the gym. I mean, that's how I'm plugged in. That's how I stay sane. Used to be a bar, now it's a gym. Well, ideally, if we can merge the both, have like a drive-in bar at the gym, that would be great. Kill two birds with one stone, but I'll work on that model and get back to you. Maybe I'll team up with those three high school kids because they're really smart. Obviously, they got it on the ball. Anyway, so it's interesting. You know, we're not going to be taking too many callers certainly today because we got a great interview on deck about a great new film coming up. But I just want to know... find out exactly what's your standpoint. And I know a lot of people understand that, you know, the cycle of the news feed. And once news comes out, it drops and it just gets obviously redistributed, repackaged, reformatted, etc. Obviously, all the different formats, TV, radio, you got to watch out for those radio folks, including me. No, I keep it kind of neutral here in terms of the political outlook because, I mean, if you're listening to the Progressive Radio Network, obviously we know where you are. And if not, obviously it's always good to know where the other side is because you should always know what someone else is thinking or kind of experiencing, whether it's in life or politics. This way you can be empathetic. This way you can understand why their actions are a certain way. I mean, that's why we call ourselves somewhat intelligent sometimes, right? Because if you think everyone else is wrong because they don't do, say, think, walk, dress, eat the same way as you, then you got some growing up to do. That's all I'll say. That's all I'll leave it at. Anyway, it's the Progressive Radio Network. I appreciate you listening. Always welcome your calls at 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Kelsey's on a board and she's manning the phones. And I want to tell you about a great, great subject that was introduced to me not too long ago by my good friend Michelle Spitz. Michelle's a dear friend of the show, a great voiceover person, and she had the privilege of doing the voiceover, the audio description from a new film called Hearing is Believing. And this is a new feature documentary from award-winning producer, director, as I mentioned, Lorenzo DiStefano, who's a great guy. And he introduces us to the world, actually, I should say, to the astonishing young musician and composer, Rachel Flowers. And she was born, imagine this, 15 weeks premature. And she came in just over a pound, just about a pound and a half body weight. I mean, that's smaller than almost the palm of your hand. And she lost her eyesight due to retinopathy, due to her prematurity. And at two, she began picking up melodies from her musician parents and was soon playing every song she heard by ear. Now, that's definitely proof that when one sense is a compromise, the others are enhanced, that's for sure, including Bach. I mean, she could play Bach. Imagine that. As a child and adult, Rachel's pitch was perfect. And here's the trailer. Hang out. Sit back. Turn us up. This is about 2 minutes long, but I want you to really enjoy this right now.
Found out I was pregnant with Rachel, we were very happy. I went into premature labor, and she was born 15 weeks premature. She ended up having several eye surgeries. We just had to accept she was going to be blind.
She instantly jumped out to me as someone that was just kind of light years ahead of all of the other people in the room.
For Rachel, music is her heart.
Because I'm happy.
I would actually hear it in a dream. I was already hearing the band in it. I was already hearing the Shakers and the...
I got Rachel Sam. She's just freakishly talented, just unbelievably talented. I'm blown away by her ability.
No! Stop!
What's your last name, Rachel?
Flowers.
Who are you?
Who is this person?
She's like a legit prodigy.
Who is this person? She's a supremely talented Rachel Flowers. She plays the piano, the flute guitar, the harp, and why not the ukulele? Why not, right? When you're that talented. I'm very happy that this has brought me, Patty Channer to the show, executive producer for Hearing is Believing, and to your home of New York City, Patty. How are you? Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. It's great to be back. We were a little late getting in, 3 hours from L.A., but made it.
You're worth the wait, my dear.
Thank you.
Anything that Lorenzo works on, and certainly the subject, Rachel Flowers, is certainly worth the wait. What an incredibly well-done, stellar film.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, it actually was and is a quintessential labor of love for everybody that was involved in this film, and I mean everybody. And I believe that also goes out to the 200 people all over the world who donated on crowdfunding that we had and who continue to donate once they see the film.
One of the first things that I thought about, certainly as an interviewer, that she was featured on 60 Minutes twice.
Yes.
And I read more about this, certainly the press material, and knowing that her mother, single parent, pretty much lives paycheck to paycheck, and she has this, you know, unbelievably talented daughter. And I'm thinking, why was she not discovered a while ago? Why wasn't there a film done her, you know, 5 years ago? And I think as a parent, like, well, maybe this is a good thing because, you know, you want to leave something untouched, you know, something that's very polished. Doesn't have to go out to the masses, certainly. But certainly when there are things that possibly that could benefit her and the family, then you think, oh, okay, maybe that would be a good outlet. But it just seems like there's just a great tide of timing that have just collided and has naturally brought Lorenzo, the executive director, together with this family, and the end result is a marvelous film.
Thanks, Mark. Yeah, it was really an organic process with this. Jeannie had been, Rachel's mom, had been approached many times and suggested to do the star, you know, the singing, America's Got Talent, whatever those all are, you know.
All the above.
Yeah, and they really believe that, you know, this is a marathon, not a sprint. It had to come in the divine order for them, you know, that it was the right time, it was the right connection, and Lorenzo, they live in Oxnard, California, and Lorenzo's in Ventura, so that was a great thing because they were right there with, you know, very, very close, and they just, you know, we're really all like a family now. We're very, very close. I mean, it's not something that we've done and we're going to move on. You know, I mean, they will always be in our lives. And as I said about the film, that, you know, everybody involved in it, really, it has been done and created as the foundation for Rachel's music to be discovered, to be moved on. She's an incredible composer. She's one of the Tom Schnabel, who has the KCRW Rhythm Planet radio station, really, as you just found out about her. And he's over the moon about it. And he, many people called her a multi-instrumentalist. And I love the way that he said it, as that she's a polymath. I mean, there really isn't anything that she cannot play, and she picks it up and she teaches herself. And over the years, she has had lessons However, it's all come from within, and she totally is the music and the instruments that she played. That is who she is.
She certainly has been born with an innate gift. I mean, yes. The fact that she could pick up the melodies at such a young age. And, you know, actually her parents understood when her mother and father were married, when Rachel was very young, that their daughter was going to be blind for the rest of her life. And they also realized that with her innate gift that, you know, she has an outlet, which is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Now, why was it, do you think that, was this discussed or was it off camera, that she had delayed speech at 3 years of age?
I don't know the specifics why it was, but you know, when I can't answer that.
Different
honestly,
gifts.
Different.
Mean,
yeah,
I really, were
I really
towards
can't.
The music.
And even now today, I mean, Rachel, you will see her speak about it in the film that she has been prior to her doing this film and now meeting so many people and being on interviews and doing Q&As, but she has been very socially inept. She alone a lot. So her social interaction,
sure.
You know.
And her mother takes care of her. It's a very, very protective bubble that she lives in. And anybody, right. We all know people like that. But exactly. Certainly she's blossomed. You could see even during the process of the film, from the trailer to the full, obviously, length part of the film where she just really comes to life. And it's nice to see because her smile, you don't see her smile much in the beginning, but then it's just, oh my God.
Oh, she's joy. She's
here you are. Heart melts.
She absolutely. I think one of the remarks about her was that when she giggles, it's pure joy, and she giggles a lot, you know.
And it's contagious, you can see.
Yes.
So one of the great aspects of the film is nice to see that Ray Charles is sitting next to her, and he's looking down, and you know, you can read the bubble over his head going, my Lord, I'm next to a prodigy.
Yes, yes, yes. She played for Ray Charles actually just shortly before he passed away. And I would say that just about, excuse me, everybody that she has played with, Herbie Hancock, Taylor Eigsti, Keith Emerson, absolutely. Keith Emerson said that she played his music better than anyone he's ever heard play it, and sometimes better than him.
As in Emerson, Lake, and Palmer.
Emerson, Lake, and Palmer, yes.
I mean, what a testament. I mean, come on.
Yeah. And she's absolutely. And Herbie Hancock, very much the same. There's a chord in one of his
genius.
Songs. That, yes, you know. So, these are, you know, these are older men. These are older, seasoned musicians that see what it is. And everything that you will see in this film where she's playing with either Taylor or Dweezil Zappa. She played with Dweezil at the Brooklyn Bowl in Las Vegas. And there's no rehearsal. I mean, this is shot one-time deal.
Well,
you know?
I was going to ask you that and get to the Brooklyn Bowl because that 15-minute portion of the film is just awe-inspiring. So imagine this. Rachel and her mother arrive. It's sound check time. I imagine it's probably, who knows, 12, 1, 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Never been on a plane before, P.S. They flew from L.A. to Vegas. So just
well,
saying.
One of many firsts, I believe, that happened that day. So she goes on stage. A tour manager is introduced, etc. She goes up and sees the multiple keyboards in the racks. And doesn't seem intimidated, gets her way around, feels everything out, does sound check and gets everything, you know, in terms of the keys that she wants and the tempos. And next thing you know, they cut away, you know, obviously hours pass. They cut away to the live show. Dweezil brings her out and she just kills it on the keys. And then he talks about how you can tell, honestly, that he's blown away by her.
Absolutely.
Because now she's in the background playing guitar and they start going back and forth, riffing back and forth for
his dad's Montana. That's right. Yeah.
And she's singing and I was just, and the crowd is just trying to contain themselves. It's really awe-inspiring, very well done. And the lighting alone was just, you know, it was a movie.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I kid with Rachel a lot, and we all do, when she is performing somewhere, because in the film, everybody in the audience at the Brooklyn Bowl is screaming, Rachel, Rachel.
I love the
And we do it, you know, and you can hear her giggling, you know, because she knows it's us, you know, in the audience. But, yeah, it's you know, that's the thing about the film is that in as you were talking about politics and you were talking about date rape and you were talking about all the...
Oh, you were listening, huh?
Oh, yeah, I was.
the green room has speakers in it? Good. Glad to hear it.
Yeah. And...
Where are you going with this? I have no idea.
Well, I can go a lot of different places.
Yes, you can.
But I will say that the film, with all the noise out there, with all the negativity that's out there, and there's fabulous documentaries and fabulous films that are made, and many of them are dark. Many of them are about the famine, about this, about the drug.
Which is important for education.
Absolutely, not a question. I have a number of friends who have worked on these types of films. However, what you see here is the audience reacting in the theater together in the dark, and they're laughing out loud. There's many touching moments. And when do you ever get, at some of the screenings we've had, standing ovations? I mean, clapping at the end of a film. So the film actually moves and inspires everyone who sees it. And it's G-rated.
And it warms you to the core.
Yeah.
Here I am in my office. It's 11 o'clock two nights ago. And I got my feet up. I was just finishing my work. I'm like, I want to watch this movie. And I was up until 1:30 or so, and I was just riveted. The whole basement's dark, and I just have my screen on. I'm just like, wow, this is incredible. Really, really loved it. I have the speakers turned up and really, really enjoyed it. And I was just thinking about just her natural gift, certainly that we all have. We all are born with certain traits that sometimes we don't know until half of our life is gone that we really have these things and tap into them. But fortunately for her, she discovered at an early age, and then they tapped into school, where she actually learned how to use musical instruments in terms of timing, segmenting, producing, running the consoles, keyboards, etc., tweaking the sounds, and her guitar tech played a vital role in her life, and I'm sure still does.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Talk about him, please.
Right, the piano. You mean the piano?
I'm sorry. Yes.
Excuse
piano
me.
Tech.
Right, the piano tech. Brian.
Brian
lives up in Seattle, Washington, and he's a music crazy person on the computer, you know, and YouTube guy, and he discovered her because he's really focused on a lot of musicians who play cover records of, you know, ELP or whoever the musicians are. He was amazed at her. And this was probably about 5-6 years ago. So she was like 17, 18. And he really found, you know, continued to find out, who is this one? How does she play this? Because she sounds exactly like the group Rush or a number of the other ones. I'm going blank here right now. But Brian himself had gone through stage 4 throat cancer, and he just thought, what could he do in his life? What was important to him? And he started contacting.
Because he got a second chance.
Got a second chance, exactly, Mark. And he contacted Jeannie and
Rachel's mother.
Rachel's mom. And said, you know, if there's ever a time you need somebody to come down and help with her keyboards, her, he's come down and done all her, I don't know the jargon about
auto engineering.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you very much. And so Brian has become a huge part of her life and our lives, and he's a wonderful man. Actually, he and another fellow, Randall Brasher, who are up in Seattle, who had never met, who live blocks away from one another.
Wow.
Randall is also a co-producer on Hearing is Believing. He heard about Rachel, same type of thing. And these are guys in their 50s, you know, 60s. I mean, and they are in the process now of creating, again, as we're saying, it's a quintessential labor of love. They're doing the soundtrack for the film. And they're completing that. I think it's almost completed. And that will be out when the film is released in June.
Fantastic.
The end of June. So it's, you know, so, I mean, yeah. People have come out that beyond belief, really.
And we're going to hear a track now. This tune is called Memories of You. And this is off her forthcoming CD. Rachel Flowers, and hearing is believing. Patty Channer.
Absolutely.
Patty Channer is my guest. She's the executive producer of the new movie Hearing is Believing. My name is Mark Farrell. The show's Insights on a Progressive Radio Network. You know, I want to read something from Lorenzo, and because this is just kind of encapsulating, I think, what you've been mentioning about the movie and everyone in the crew involved with the movie. Rachel's given abilities and the music that is her inspiration make her a talent that cannot be ignored. Everyone on our team believes that she is fully deserving of the imaginative and insightful film we plan to make about her, which is in the can. Rachel is a survivor who is fast maturing into a consummate musical artist. It has been critical to deal with Rachel's blindness in a fresh and uncliched way. Yeah. I really enjoy that. Yeah. Connecting the audience to the visual and tonal dreamscapes that inspire Rachel's compositions, end quote. So that kind of says it.
Yeah.
And you mentioned before that there's so many very, very talented people, including the cinematographer, the audio engineers, they're doing the soundtrack to it, that are all pretty much have become the extended Flower family.
Absolutely. Team Rachel. We call it Team
Rachel. Team Rachel. I love it.
But I do wanted to also talk to you about her album that
sure,
you just mentioned
do.
That you played the Memories of You part on. This, her album, which is called Listen, is on Pandora, it's on Spotify, it's on wherever you go. You can just Google it.
And it's on her website, I believe.
Yes, it's on
her website. RachelFlowers.com.
Right.
RachelFlowers.com. Fantastic. How many tracks are on there?
There are 10 tracks. And the thing about this is that every song on here is composed, and all of the music is done, performed by her.
But of course.
Yes. Well, right.
And I'm sure she did the artwork on the CD,
right,
too.
The polymath.
Yeah, exactly.
And several people have, and I find this interesting, so does to Lorenzo, that we give the album to, as I'm giving it to you right now.
Ah, fantastic.
Yes, yes, yes. And people have said, well, you know, it's fabulous, it's great, it's wonderful, you say, but there's no mention of anyone else, you know, playing on it with her. And it's like, well, that's because no one else is
does
playing
not apply.
On it.
Exactly.
Right. Right.
I am not a huge Van Halen fan. Hang in there. There's a connector here. Yeah. But I got some free tickets years ago, and I saw them in concert. You know, I like some of their music, and I was in the first 10 rows, and I was just marveled how much fun these guys have on stage. Mm. So we've all been to shows where, you know, you may like the band, could be, who knows, the Eagles, could be Moby, who knows, you know, Katy Perry, whoever the case may be. And you go there, and they're really good musicians, and they can be really into it. Or sometimes they're just not charismatic, and they sound great, and they're just doing, you know, what you were used to hearing. But the difference of the showmanship, the consummate performance, is just unbelievable. So when I saw Van Halen, you get that feeling like these are kids in a candy store. And the same thing when I see Rachel Flowers perform, even in her bedroom, where she, you know, all the magic happens on the music, I should say. It's not a real bedroom, it's her studio. I mean, she's just blown away, and you can tell she is so focused. The house could probably be burning down, and she'd just be, you know, jamming away, because that's what she does.
Absolutely. That's who she is.
She's hyper-abled. She, I think I read that somewhere.
Yes, yes. She is the music, and she lives in the moment. I mean, she is the music, and she is her instruments. I mean, that's it.
Patty Channer, talk about her education. Obviously, you went through mainstream education process. Was she someone who got along with other people well, or was she more of a loner, and did she have other friends as musicians? Because ultimately, she started playing at a jazz club not too far from her, and that's kind of what got her some notoriety. But leading up to that, the years before that, talk about her as a young woman.
You know, Mark, I really did not know Rachel that prior to this.
Sure.
So I know she attends the Braille Institute in Santa Barbara, and
still currently, correct?
Currently, yes. And she has friends up there, but she is more of a singular person. You know, she is, as again I say, she is the music. That's her entire life's focus. She
and her
loves
father
it.
In the movie kind of opens that door, and I think he's probably more concerned about maybe other aspects of life, because we all know a balanced life is a healthy life. So, but this is, you know, when you have a trait and a quality and maybe a challenge in life, you maybe can't compare that to other people's lives, because this is everything for her. I mean, this is her DNA. This is her extended heart, you know, whatever musical device that she picks up. Mm-hmm. So I know that, and as a father and as a parent, certainly I understand that, you know, you want the best for your child. Mm-hmm. And it's ironic that her father is losing his vision.
Yes, 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 exactly. Well, and I will say Jeannie and Dan both, you know, want, they're ready, you know, they're going to have to let Rachel go when the day happens, you know.
She's 23
and
now.
She's 23 now, you know. And the thing is that she is in a whole new world, you know. And from when we started this production on this film to where she is today in her communication, in her social,
it's evident.
Huge. Yeah. Absolutely huge.
And this is a proper time.
Way more comfortable with people, you know, than she was, not as timid. So this is the springboard. You know, as I said, the movie's the foundation for her to, not only for her music, but her life and her interaction, you know, with people. So, and her dad found out a number of years ago, Dan lives at the Wave working on his Ventura. Working on his Ventura. A little spot there. And, He is actually going blind. He has a degenerative, and it's not macular degeneration. We spoke about it yesterday, but he is going blind. And so Rachel is now able to really help her dad. And she's light years ahead of him, obviously. She goes with him to the Braille Institute, but on all of the audio equipment and the communication equipment she has, you know, she's been doing it forever. He's just going, even with the cane. Dan is literally now just realizing that he has to depend on the cane, you know, where Rachel knew nothing different. I mean, she's been using a cane since she could walk. So, you know, it's been amazing, and they're very, very close. Even though Dan and Jeannie are divorced, and they have been for some time, they're all a tight-knit family.
Well, I imagine, besides the obvious thing that why a daughter and father love each other, but they also have music, because as a musician himself, a lifelong musician, and Jeannie can sing. I mean, in the movie, you can hear her. Well, I go, wow, she's got some chops as well. And the grandparents.
Yes.
But I love this scene where they're on the pier. And they go out and they're both playing. And I'm just like, and the sun's behind them. I'm like, well done, Stefano.
Yes,
Lorenzo.
Yes.
I'm just like, wow, this is a great scene on many, many levels. And it just kind of, it warms your heart.
Yeah. It is. But the other really exciting scene, I think, if I can just say this,
please,
is that At the End of the Day is a song that Rachel composed. And we were able to get the Santa Barbara Youth Orchestra to practice that and play that. And we had it orchestrated for an orchestra. And it's the piece that's in the film is one of my favorite. And it always really gives me goosebumps when it's going, because these kids practiced it for like 3 or 4 days. Then we came back. We filmed it in Montecito at Hahn Hall. Rachel was there to play the piano for the first time. This is absolutely the first time that she heard her song orchestrated. These weren't takes. We didn't take. This was one shot deal that we filmed this, and so it was the. You see these kids, you know, starting to learn how to play, you know, play this and learn it, and then we have the final day. It was 3 days. The final day, no audience, just the youth orchestra and Rachel playing this song, and it's amazing.
It's magical.
It's magical.
It really is. I mean, that's the epitome of music right there.
Yes.
You know, first of all, even just any time an orchestra is playing, nothing tops an orchestra. I mean, when you get so many gifted people, talented people, and strings and everything, you know, in sync.
Mm-hmm.
And then, obviously, you get the magical powers of Rachel Flowers in the room, and she just lets it go. Flows, it takes it to a whole nother level.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of like maybe 20 or 30 times I was like, oh, goosebumps, big time, big time. So let's talk about the premiere in New York City happening Friday here in New York City at the Cinema Village in New York City. That's 22 East 12th Street. It's happening Friday, of course, and there's multiple show times, and there's a Q&A. Which is very, very cool. So anyone who's listening to the show here, please do join in. Certainly, you can ask some incredible questions to the filmmakers. It's going to be Friday after the 7:15 p.m. show, Saturday after the 7 p.m. show, and on Sunday after the 3:15 p.m. show. So where can people find the times listed?
They can go online to thecinemavillage.com, and it's all listed there, and it specifically says the Q&As and all of that.
Fantastic.
And can I just say something about that, because I'm really excited? Taylor Eichsti, who is in the film, who is a composer and jazz musician who gives workshops up at Stanford University, where he met Rachel.
Renowned individual.
Yes, yes. And he is in New York, and he's going to join me for the Q&A on Friday night. So
great.
Very, very excited.
Yes.
And a moment to say that you said Michelle Spitz.
Michelle Spitz is incredible. And we have to obviously take pause to remark that this particular movie theater, thank you, I've been up since 4 o'clock this morning, has audio description. So audio description is extremely important. You've heard me talk about this before, because for people who have challenges, especially visual impairment and or blindness, to go to the movies is not something they could experience that well, because until now, they would not know what's taking place between the words. So for example, the movie opens, we heard the trailer before, there was a lot of different noises. So the audio describer, the voiceover person, which in this case is Michelle Spitz, describes what's taking place. Rachel walks into a room, looks at keyboards, sees sunset, parents hug, walks onto stage, things of that nature. So it's actually very, very cool, because at one point I actually shut my eyes. I'm visually impaired, but certainly I can see the screen well enough, but I want to experience it in a different light, and it's key that certainly paramount to the film that this is audio described, because it just is part and parcel with the message that certainly despite someone's challenges and or hurdles and or differences in life, that you can soar and rise above them. And I tell people in audiences all the time that, you know, I've done so many different things in my life and I just had to do them differently. I mean, my mantra is my difference makes me stronger. Even though I have a visual impairment, I make incredible bookcases, decks, you know, nothing stopped me in my life. I do triathlons, et cetera. You just do things differently, work harder. And so maybe you don't win, you don't come in, but who cares? As long as you do something that's passionate in your life that fuels you. And it's evident when she takes a stage, when she's in her room behind the keyboards holding the guitar, the ukulele. I mean, ukulele. Why does somebody want to play a ukulele? Because Rachel can make it sound like that.
And now she wants to do. When we left Hawaii after we were at the Hawaii Film Festival, I said to her, now what do you want to do with the ukulele, you know? And she said, I wanna learn how to play jazz on the ukulele. Now there's rock. Jake Shimabukuro is the ukulele rock star, you know, and Rachel wants to do jazz, so she will do jazz.
Well, it seems like she does multiple genres very well. Oh, jazz, rock, pop, classical, Bach.
Classical, Bach. I mean, she's, yes. I
does
mean,
she have a preference?
No.
No?
She does not. She's been asked that numerous times, and she really doesn't. She doesn't.
Does she, or has she ever complained about her vision or lack of vision or being blind?
Never. Never that I have ever, not once.
What is the biggest struggle for their family?
Finances. I mean, they're, you know, we're talking, as you mentioned in the beginning, paycheck to paycheck. Jeannie is a single mom. She has Rachel, 23, and Vaughn, who is Rachel's brother, who's a budding young artist, fabulous young guy.
And seems very supportive.
Yes, yes, yes. But it financially. So, you know, again, the film is the foundation to move her along in her career and, you know, bump it up somewhat. So.
Looking back at the 2 years in the production?
Two and a half years.
In terms of when you first met the family, halfway through, and you see everyone evolving. And the best thing about documentaries, I think, is the natural evolution because of the lack of script. Certainly, you have a direction. There's a story you want to tell and themes. And obviously, you have camera shots and way to execute the concept. But what did you walk away, you and or Lorenzo, not expecting to have learned, and what impact it had on your life?
Oh, wow. Well, Lorenzo would probably say, you know, acknowledging seeing the great that exists in the small. You know, Rachel is a tiny little person. She lives in a small town. She's like really everybody else. And she has this incredible musical genius greatness to share with the world. And the first impact it had on my life is probably that I had retired.
Are you kidding me?
A while back.
Retired from what? There's no way you're not getting any AARP in the mail. No way.
You're just
sucking up for compliments.
But I will say it's been a full-time labor of love, but full-time. And so we're kind of, you know, at this part where we're going to move on, and the film will have its commercial release with Gravitas Ventures June 20th, and then it'll be digitally released at that time, and then the home video release will be July 11th, and
CD Blu-ray,
and then the and there's a lot of special bonus features. Like we could not put in the part with Ray Charles. Because it was so long, and if you cut it and out of context,
lost
and we couldn't
something.
Make that. Yeah, exactly.
You can't cut Ray.
Right. I know, but it's in the
trailer.
You know, so I mean, and there's a number of things like that, like Arturo Sandoval.
Oh my God, I love Arturo.
Well, he was amazing. I mean, when he says, I mean, and all of this, there was no, as you know, no script, no nothing, and you know, when he says the bomb, you know, music is the bomb. It opens the heart.
I love it.
you know, kids need music because, as you all know, we're cutting music and arts and everything out of our schools, which is absolutely, in my opinion, insanity. But, you know, and that's him saying that reality of it, you know, and I could go on about a lot of other things. But
now, director Lorenzo DiFestano
DiStefano.
Well, you know, I have two friends, one Stefan and one Stefano. So this has been a rock in my world. My apologies, Lorenzo. You're a great guy. I appreciate you. When I meet you in person, you can take it out on me. Okay. Lorenzo. Anyway, he's done a few great documentaries based on film, music. How is this one different, as you expressed a few moments ago, in terms of the intimacy, in terms of how it just touched his heart in a different manner?
Yes. He did two films, Talmadge Farlow and Los Zafiros, which was done in Havana, Cuba, which was about the Sapphires, a group of Cuban vocalists in the 60s. And
sounds
they kind
dreamy.
Of took off the like the Platters, you know. And he did maintain relationship. I mean, he's maintained relationship with Talmadge Farlow
I imagine it's hard not to because you become so ensconced and intimate with everybody.
But I think, you know, all those, again, were on location. Mm-hmm. I mean, Havana, Cuba.
Sure.
And I don't know. I think Lorenzo's written many plays. He's produced.
Very
he's
talented.
Directed. He's incredibly talented. And I've, personally, for me, I have
22 years you've been with him? It's like you're married.
Sorry, Lorenzo.
We're really setting it to you now, Lorenzo.
I only had one love of my life, and he transitioned in May of 2013. So,
my condolences. Hearing is believing. You have to see this to believe it. The Rachel Flowers story. Make sure you check her out, rachelflowers.com. Rachelflowers.com. Is there a website for the movie?
Yes, hearingisbelievingfilm.com. And it's all over Facebook, and we're going crazy on Facebook now to make sure everybody does. So when you come to, I'm here in New York. When you come, all my New York friends and family, I'm coming after you if you don't see you there. And
coming from a New Yorker, I would show up.
Yeah. And really, please make sure that you acknowledge yourself to me because I look forward to seeing everybody.
Finally, Patty, I want to ask you about Rachel's mother. What's the end result for her? I mean, she's
Jeannie.
Obviously first and foremost concern is her daughter's well-being.
Yes.
How did this impact her, this whole project?
Jeannie's been thrilled with it because of her relationship with the organic way that Lorenzo, Jeannie, and Rachel, and Vaughn, you know, Vaughn's the brother. Vaughn was kind of like, you know, he's not so sure about this guy hanging around taking pictures of my mother, you know. But he's but he's very, very cool with it now. But he, I think Jeannie's thrilled. Jeannie's thrilled that her daughter is getting the attention that
spotlight she so deserves.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And she's a wonderful woman.
Patty Channer, thank you so much. Executive Director Lorenzo
DiStefano.
Yes, what a great team you guys make.
Thank
Hearing
you.
Is believing. My name is Mark Farrell. Thank you so much to all the talented people here at the Progressive Radio Network, Jesse and Kelsey. My name is Mark Farrell. As I just said, if you want me to speak at your school, college, corporation, camp, or whatever, markfarrellmotivation.com, markfarrellmotivation.com. Happy Father's Day. Stay cool and enjoy.
Thank you.